Hello. One of those beautiful things that we say to people with a big smile on our face when we haven't met somebody before or when we haven't seen somebody for a really long time. We say hello, and we often say, how are you? And we have a conversation. That beautiful thing called communication. Well, today's conversation between you and I is going to be really awkward and uncomfortable. Maybe not for you, but it certainly is going to be for me. Because we live in a world now where our communication skills, have you noticed, have become perhaps disrespectful, perhaps rude, invasive, controversial. People gossip, people say nasty things about other people. And often now it's not even face-to-face nasty. It's on social media. It's a post. It's a comment on somebody's YouTube. I'm not sure, and it's hard for me because as an old lady, I've lived on this planet a very long time, and I was taught, of course, as a very young child that you respect your elders, you respect all the people in your life, you listen, you accept that other people have a different opinion to you. And that's quite interesting because I was brought up in a very strict religious environment where there was some pretty straight down the line, you have to believe this or you're not going to heaven kind of religious beliefs. But I was still always taught that another human being has a brain of their own, they have an opinion and a right to have it. We can't change what other people do. We just get to respond or react to what they do. So great manners like please and thank you and I appreciate you and saying sorry and accepting if we're wrong and admitting when we're wrong, there's a big one. If I'm going to have a discussion with somebody, does it have to be an argument? If I disagree with somebody else's opinion, do I have to tell them that they're wrong? And are they wrong? It's one of those interesting questions that I always ask myself so that I'm always learning. I always ask, what if I'm wrong? Regardless of what my opinion is, my conviction, something that is really important to me, if somebody tells me something that goes against that belief or that conviction or that commitment that I've made to myself, I'm still always open for what if I'm wrong. And I hope that that's something that keeps me humble. I hope it's something that keeps me open to learning. And we live in a world where, and of course there are some, and again I've been taught since I was a little girl, there are some things that we don't talk about or we shouldn't talk about. So don't get into a conversation with people that you don't know and start sharing your religious beliefs or your political beliefs or your sexual persuasion. Or there's some things that, again, as an older lady, I've been taught that they're things that we should get to know about people and be genuinely interested into. Interested in their opinion and their convictions and why they believe what they believe rather than trying to tell people that they should believe what I believe. And again, I'll just, before I go any further, I'll just ask that question. Do other people, other humans, have the right to have a different opinion to me? And why would I be right? And you might think, well, I am right. And of course, we have the right to have the opinion that we're right. But what if we're not? And what if our preaching or yelling or arguing or bullying or whatever it's called now, trying to get people to believe the same thing that we do, what if we're wrong, or what if that person has a very legitimate reason for believing the things that they believe? And that's why, and I'll just use an example because I was brought up in a very religious environment, that was just one religion. I'm not sure if you've had a look lately, but there are literally thousands of religions in the world, and some of them believe kind of the same thing, and other ones believe exactly the contradicting, controversial opposite. I like to ask people, I'm really interested in people's religious beliefs or their Christian beliefs, or whether they're Muslim or Hindu or Jehovah's Witness or Seventh-day Adventist, or I don't care, I just want to find out. Because if I was brought up as a Seventh-day Adventist, which I was, and I tell everybody you should be a Seventh-day Adventist, there's a really quick way to get into an argument, by the way. And I'll just give you some examples there. I was taught that if you didn't go to church on Saturday, that you weren't going to go to heaven. I was taught that if you drank coffee, you weren't going to go to heaven. If you ate meat from pigs or shellfish, you weren't going to go to heaven. There were a lot of things in my upbringing that were really strong and that there weren't opinions in the Seventh-day Adventist religion. They're not opinions. They're, if you don't do this, you're not going to heaven. Just as an interesting side note to that, though, as I've obviously lived a very long time, even that particular religion, there's some people who have really strong beliefs about coffee and eating meat and whether or not you're going to go to heaven because you go to church on Saturday. And there's other people in the same religion who have become a little bit less strict. So who's right? And I don't know the answer to that. I actually don't care. I just want to be able to live my life with my opinions and my beliefs and my convictions, and I want to appreciate other people's beliefs and opinions and convictions. And the reason this has become such a very uncomfortable and awkward topic now is I'm living in a world like you are, where what somebody has chosen to do medically has become other people's opinions, and there's a lot of people preaching and yelling and bullying for people to either not have a certain medical interaction or intervention into their life, or that they should have that medical interaction and intervention into their life. And for a long time, and it's been nearly 2 years now, I've watched people at both ends, and there's some extremists at this end who they've thrown their family out of their life. They don't talk to their own children or their own parents. They've got divorced. They've broken up friendships with people because they believe that you should have this certain medical intervention. And the reverse of that at this end, if you get that medical intervention, I'm never going to talk to you, and I'm not going to sleep with you ever again, and I'm not going to have you in my life, and I don't love you anymore, because if you do that, then it seems a bad person. And that seems to be the two ends of the scale. And then if you put into that the conspiracy theories at both ends of those scales, and there's some really bizarre conspiracy theories at this end and some really bizarre ones at this end, what do you do? Every person in the world is sitting somewhere between, I think it's a really bad idea to have a medical intervention that's considered a solution for a worldwide medical pandemic virus, and there's people at this end that are saying you have to have this medical intervention, it's the most important thing you can possibly do for your family and your friends. And there's a lot of in between there, and there's an interesting group in the middle who never wanted to have this medical intervention, but because they either going to lose their job or their family, or they can't travel or they can't go to their favorite restaurant, then they decided, okay, I'm going to have this medical intervention. But now they feel really bad about themselves because they went against their core values. So there's, and I can only share this with you very openly, because that's what I do every day. I talk to people literally from all over the world. The Max International Colleges right now has students in 18 countries around the world. And just on how different countries have handled a worldwide medical pandemic has been really interesting. There are some people in the world right now who are just living like they always did pre-2020. They're traveling, they're going to concerts, they're eating at restaurants, they're going to nightclubs, they're going to the gym, they're going to their personal trainer, they're not showing any form of identification or whether or not they've had a medical intervention, they're just living their lives normally. And there's other people who literally can't come out of their home. And if they do come out of their home, they have to prove that they've had a medical intervention. This is a very hot topic. It's a very political topic. And I don't want to get into that. That's not what That's not what I'm uncomfortable about. Because I really respect the people that have this opinion, and I respect the people that have this opinion, and I just want them to do what they believe is best for them. I think where the challenge comes in is when this group tells these people that they should do what I think is right for you, and these people say, no, you should do what I think is right for you. And now we have this, it's not arguing anymore, it's become a war, it's become a social, it's like we've got two classes of people, the people who have and the people who haven't. And I'm going to share with you very personally why this is confronting for me and awkward and uncomfortable. And why I would love people just to be nice to each other and accept that everybody has the right to their own opinion. My mother was brought up in Nazi Germany, and so I think she was born 1920s, something like that. So she she grew up with a dictatorship coming into play. And one of the things that I used to ask my mother when I was a teenager is, how on earth did you as a nation end up hating a group of people that lived in your society with you? The Jewish people in Germany were just part of the community. It wasn't like people were brought up to, you know, that you don't like them because they're Jewish. That was never how it was in the beginning. My mother explained this to me very simply. She said, what happened is Germans, and my mother very much so, very clean, very organized, very disciplined, pedantically clean. And there was a propaganda story that started, and I don't want to, again, get into the politics, but I'm just going to share with you what my mother told me. She said, I was told that the Jewish people were dirty, and that if you got in contact with a Jewish person, you could get infected with all sorts of diseases. So when I was growing up, if we saw Jewish people walking towards us on the street, my mother would walk us to the other side of the street and say, we can't go near them because they're dirty. And that obviously became more aggressive, and I can't begin to understand how a dictator could take a whole race of people and try to exterminate them. But my mother had a little bit of an explanation for that, because she said the German people were taught to hate the Jews. Now, that's just my personal upbringing. The reverse of that, or my father, who's the reverse of my mother, obviously, he was born up in communist Romania. So in the communist society that he was brought up in, and my father was a Catholic priest, and his brother was a doctor, and his other brother was a lawyer. That was kind of that's what you had to do in their social construct, was that if you had three boys, one became a doctor, one became a lawyer, and one became a priest. So I'm sharing that with you because my father, he was brought up in a comfortable environment, but it was a communist environment. So even him as a young priest, as his brothers as young doctors and lawyers, they weren't allowed to talk to each other on the street. So if two people were found talking to each other face to face on the street, they were arrested and put in jail, because the government, the communist government at the time, suggested that you were conspiring against the government, so you were locked away. I'm going to say this horrible word, which I really don't like hearing on a day-to-day basis. Their life was cancelled because the government said, you don't agree with our point of view, you might be conspiring against us, so we're going to lock you away. Now, I'm going to take that a little bit further. This is all very personal for me, so I hope you understand why it's so awkward and uncomfortable. My father not only became a Catholic priest, but he became a Catholic priest in the Vatican in Rome. So he moved from communist Romania to the Vatican. And I think in priest hierarchy, that's pretty cool. And he lived a lot of his life literally being a priest, at the very top end of priestness. So he was a highly recognized and a highly appreciated priest. But what happened is he was a man with normal desires, and he always tells me this really cool story that he had his first sexual experience with a nun when he was 10 years of age. Now, I share that because he told me that story, and the way he shared it with me, it was a really cool story. But he obviously loved women, and as a priest, that's not part of your life, obviously. And he couldn't understand why. He must have had some internal drive, some internal fire for women. So he did a complete search of the Bible, and I've often shared this. My father could repeat the Bible verbatim because he was a theologian. That was his job. He was a priest. So all he did was read the Bible. Now, obviously, he did other things, but that was a big part of his life. He could repeat the Bible. He knew every text, every verse in the Bible. So he searched the Bible, and he wrote a letter to the Pope and said, excuse me, sir, but I cannot find anywhere in the Bible where it says that men shouldn't get married or men shouldn't have women in their life. In fact, it's the opposite. It seems that the Bible is very pro men having women in their life and men being in love and men and women being together. And it was and all I'm sharing with you, I'm not giving you my opinion. I'm just sharing with you my upbringing and what my parents shared with me about their lives. So this letter got to the Pope, and I don't know too much about the Catholic Church except what my father has shared with me, but that apparently didn't go down so well. My father was thrown out of the Catholic Church, but he wasn't just thrown out of the Catholic Church. He was put into Auschwitz concentration camp as a political prisoner. And as you can see now, this is where my mother and my father connected. So my mother was in Nazi Germany. That's where she lived. And it turned out that as a teenager, she was making bombs for Hitler. She didn't realise what she was doing. And when she did realise, she wanted to run away. She didn't want to be making bombs that killed people. I know this sounds like some kind of weird storybook, but this was my life. When we would sit around the dinner table at home, these were the stories that my parents not just told us, but it's what they lived through. It was their life. So my father was in Auschwitz concentration camp, and the only reason that he didn't get gassed was because our last name, Cesarin, S-Z, apparently the Jews were gassed in alphabetical order. And on the arrival at concentration camp, obviously my father's last name being Cesarin with an S-Z, he was put at the end of the line. He could speak seven languages fluently, including German, so it wasn't long before he could communicate quite effectively with the people in the concentration camp, that he wasn't a Jew, he was actually a Catholic priest. So it was my father's job then to take the jewellery off the people that were being gassed, to knock their gold teeth out, to go through their baggage. And I'm trying to keep... This is really hard for me because this is my father, not my grandfather. This was my father who lived through this. And when I first heard these stories, these were... It was hard to believe. And the only reason that I now know they were true is, of course, there's been movies made and many books read, written, and personal stories of people that there's still people alive from the Holocaust that have shared their stories. And I remember the first time I realized what my father had shared with me, I actually read a book by Mr. Hess, who's the guy that ran Auschwitz concentration camp, and he wrote that book just before he was removed from the world for crimes against humanity, I'll put it that way. And I realized that the stories that my father had told me from concentration camp were true. If you've ever watched the movie Schindler's List, you can imagine that was pretty hard for me to watch, because that was the stories that my father had shared with me. Now, how this came together is my father was rescued by the American army out of concentration camp. He was taken to Berlin to recover. He was obviously very unwell. And my mother was a nurse. She had become a nurse in Berlin, and that's where she met my father, and she nursed him back to health, and they got on a boat and came as refugees to Australia. My parents lived through two very different experiences, but one of the things that my father said to me as I was growing up, he didn't want me to ever go and see Hungary or Romania, and technically my father was Hungarian, but where he was born is now, the border has changed and it's now Romania. And he said to me, I don't want you to go there because as a communist country, it was a horrible place to live. He said, we lined up for our food. There wasn't enough food. We weren't allowed to communicate. It was just a horrible place to live. And he brought his family to Australia because he wanted them to live in freedom. He wanted us. And I'll just use this as an example. My father could speak seven languages fluently. And obviously my mother could speak German because that's where she was born. But my parents didn't teach. There's five of us in my family. My brothers and sisters and myself, none of us speak any other language. Because when my parents moved to Australia, they said, we've come to this beautiful free country. I want us to speak English. And my mother and father even only spoke to each other in English because they wanted to become integrated into the Australian society, and they wanted to bring their children up in a free society. And interestingly, my father then became a Seventh-day Adventist minister, and that for me was, I take the very best out of my upbringing, which is be kind, be respectful, respect the people, have the right to their opinion, don't gossip, Don't criticize. Don't pull people down. Be nice to people. Don't tell lies. Don't exaggerate. Don't kill people. Don't steal. You know that interesting group of laws from the Bible that seem to make pretty good sense. And now, as an old lady, I live in a world where people are yelling at each other, they're screaming at each other, they're abusing each other, and that's in their own family because of a medical intervention. Now, I have no interest in getting into the argument of whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, because I think it's a personal thing. And there's a lot of argument about looking after the rest of the world and being responsible for the people in our world. And something that I'm very proud of, and something that I was taught very young, is that I need to take responsibility for my health and my life. And each individual person that takes responsibility for their health and their life is more likely to, do we need to accept the consequences of our choices? I've lived this since I was 13 years of age. I haven't missed a day of exercise since I was 10 years of age, technically, because I was doing, from 10 to 13, I was just doing exercises on the floor, which I technically don't consider to be exercise because they're a silly waste of time. But I exercised every day from when I was 10 to when I was 13, from 13 till now, a very old lady. I've never missed a day of exercise. I run, I lift heavy things, I punch bag. I have a healthy headspace, I've got a healthy, fit, strong body, I take full responsibility for my health, and that's been my driving force every day, is for our kids to grow up in a world that's healthy. And the beautiful thing about a healthy body, and again, I don't want to get into the argument about this, but there is not too much argument that when you have a healthy, fit, strong body, it can fight germs, bugs, viruses and diseases. And our chances of being unwell from any disease, including the big killer diseases. In my lifespan, I've had a lot of people, for example, that have been diagnosed with cancer. And it's been, I don't want to observe this, and I hope it never happens to me, but it's been really an interesting and, for me, an exciting observation that the people that have been fit and strong and then being diagnosed with cancer have gotten through that process so much better. And even the people that in my life that have died from cancer, they lived their life with power and passion and enthusiasm because they were fit, strong humans. So even people that were given 6 months to live or even 6 weeks to live, they made the most of those 6 weeks because they were fit, strong people who had healthy brain and a healthy headspace, and they had a brain that was filled up with those neurochemicals that make us feel good. I'm sharing that with you because there's some things that are in our control and there's some things that are out of our control. We have a great philosophy that it was taught to me was accept the things that you cannot change, change the things you can, and make sure that you've got the wisdom to know the difference. So make sure you're learning and educating and training your own brain so you can work out the difference between the things that you can change and the things that you can't change. And if you can change it, then change it, make it different, make it better. If you can't change it, accept it, but accept it with grace and style. And I use that as an example because I'm hearing every day now about people that have had a medical intervention who don't want anything to do with the people that haven't had a medical intervention. And my question is this: could we find out why this person has decided that it's really important to them and accept that they have the right to do that? Could we find out why this person has decided it's not the right thing for them and accept that they have the right to that opinion? And rather than yelling at each other and arguing with each other and not wanting to see each other and being aggressive to the people in our family, I spoke to one of my business associates yesterday whose son has told her, "You can't come for Christmas because of a medical intervention." Either she or he has decided yes or no, and because they're at opposing views, he doesn't want to see his mother at Christmas. I've got students who have broken up from their husband or wife or their partner. I've got families that won't talk to each other and they're yelling and screaming at each other and they're being really abusive. I don't have an answer to whether this is right or this is right. I'm just a woman who's, I love my life, I love my world. I'm very privileged to have been brought up in the beautiful country of Australia, and now I live in the beautiful country of New Zealand. And I've got the experience of my parents growing up in communism and the Nazi regime, and I don't want that for anybody. And that's their experience. There's some people who believe that communism is a great way to live, and there's some people that believe that the Nazi society was a great way to live. I don't care. I can't change any of that. All I'm asking is that perhaps could we be kind? Could we be nice? Could we be respectful? And could respect mean asking? So if somebody shares with me that they're a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon, I'm really interested. Tell me about that. Why do you believe that? Why is that important to you? How did you come about that belief? Somebody tells me they had an interaction, a medical interaction, versus they didn't have a medical interaction. Tell me why. Why was that important to you, or why is that not important to you? Why do you believe what you believe? How do you feel about it? Without giving an opinion or without getting into an argument. Is there enough argument and disrespect and yuckiness in the world that we don't have to bring it into our lives? And if you have a really strong opinion about either end, maybe associate with the people that believe the same things that you do, so you don't have to have an argument. And if it's your family, could we find a way around rather than yelling and screaming and being nasty and telling people to get out of our lives? Could there come a time where that, and I'm going to put it in the worst case scenario. If somebody in your life has decided either end of this medical intervention, but you're going to lose them because they were diagnosed with a terminal illness, what would you do then? I don't have an answer to that. I wish that we would think about it. And as I always ask, what about our kids? Our kids that are seeing us arguing with our family, with our friends, with our partner. If mum and dad are arguing, where does that leave our child? I'd like our children to have open minds, to have minds open to learning, and kids that respect other people's right to have an opinion. And I often share this. I've been going to America for nearly all of my life since I've been an adult, and I don't know if it's still an American philosophy, but I certainly learnt it from some very passionate, strong, committed Americans who have fought wars for this particular philosophy. People who went to war and they were prepared to give up their life for this philosophy, which is you have an opinion and I have an opinion and we both have the right to our opinion. And even if I disagree with your opinion, I will fight to the death for your right to have it. And there are very many millions of people that have died for our right to have an opinion. People who have died for our freedom. There are people who have died fighting for the countries that I've been brought up in to be free places for us to live, where we're kind to each other, we support each other, and we want to create a beautiful environment for each other. So whatever end of the scale you're at or anywhere in between, could we find out the reasons why rather than just have an argument?